This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon. This is Evan Fowler from Bot Radio Network sitting in for Tony Perkins. Happy Friday afternoon. The weekend's coming up. That's great. Something to look forward to. We have a great lineup of topics today. This is a real barn burner. I mean, every day on Washington Watch, it's something interesting. It's something new. It's current. It's about what's going on in the world around us. And today we've got a great lineup. We're going to be talking about the proposal to double the funding of the committee that's investigating what's going on with Planned Parenthood and other abortion providers who've been involved in selling aborted baby body parts. We're going to be talking with Dr. Alveda King about that topic. She is the niece of Dr. Martin Luther King, a good friend of ours here at Bot Radio Network as well. Then we're going to talk about the fact that Nancy Pelosi was elected to another two-year term for House Minority Leader. Going to talk about what that means. Did the Democrats, did they not get what just happened in this last election? And they're going back to retread country, if you will. Our final segment, and it'll be an opportunity for you to call in and discuss and get into the conversation. We're going to be talking about the recent comments by President-elect Trump, where he talked about flag burning, and you know his view is that there should be some consequences for doing that. We'll talk a little bit about the history of that, what's going on in Israel with that. We're going to talk to a Harvard law professor who actually is an advocate of some sort of a flag burning amendment. So that'll be an interesting conversation, and we'll want you to participate in that. Well, first topic here, first segment, at a rally in Ohio last night, President-elect Donald Trump confirmed that he will nominate retired General James Mattis for defense secretary. The 66-year-old Mattis retired as chief of U.S. Central Command in 2013 after serving for more than four decades in the Marines. Let's listen to that little bit of audio from the rally last night.
I don't want to tell you this because I want to save the suspense for next week. So I will not tell you. I refuse to tell, and don't let it outside of this room. Do you promise? Raise your hand. Promise. So I will not tell you that one of our great, great generals. Don't let it outside, right? And of course, the press is very honest. They'll never let this go. Even though it's all live, they got about seven stations live. We are going to appoint Mad Dog Mattis as our Secretary of Defense.
There you go. That's Donald Trump, President-elect Donald Trump, at a rally last night in Ohio, sort of teasing the audience just a little bit about the his intention to appoint General Mattis. On the line with us right now is Lieutenant Colonel Ralph Peters. He's a Fox News strategic analyst. Colonel, nice to have you on the broadcast this afternoon.
Hey, great to speak with you, Evan, and to all your listeners out there.
Well, tell us a little bit briefly about your career and your knowledge of General Mattis. What do you know about him?
Well, my career is really not relevant to this. I just served 22 years in the Army as an enlisted man and officer, and then decided it was time to move on and write. But General Mattis, whom I first met 15 or 16 years ago, when I was doing some, I was retired from the Army, I was doing some overseas projects for the Marines and in the developing world. And I met him, I was giving a back brief on some sensitive information. And he was just such a good listener. At first, I didn't know how to read him. He listened so intently. And at the end of a fairly long briefing, he just asked very astute questions. And then after that, we were on various panels together, just ran into each other in the military. I did a little bit more work for the Marines. And we just got to know each other a little and had dinner together occasionally. So while I would not presume to call him an intimate friend by any means, I'd say we're friendly acquaintances. And I know General Mattis, General Jim Mattis, well enough to have absolute faith in him as a man of exemplary character, of deep integrity. And to me, you know, his other qualifications, that he's a really tough battlefield Marine, that he's a profound thinker about strategy and a serious historian, that's all important. But I come back again and again to he's a man of integrity. Jim Mattis would never do anything to harm this country. He's not a go-along, get-along guy. And the only possible problem I could see for him down the road would be if he saw something developing in foreign or security policy that he really thought was potentially detrimental to our country, he just wouldn't be able to put up with it. He's a man of great moral rectitude.
Well, I heard some, there was quite a bit of discussion, of course, on the various networks this morning about this appointment that was announced sort of teasingly, as we heard in that sound clip, by President-elect Trump. And most of those comments echoed what you just said, and that is that when he sits in a room, he's very quiet, and he spends a lot of time listening to what the other folks have to say before he forms an opinion and expresses his opinion. And what was said is that those people have found that when he talks, people listen. It's sort of like E.F. Hutton, the old E.F. Hutton ad. Is that what you found to be the case?
Well, absolutely. The last time I saw General Mattis, we're both part of a military history working group out of the Hoover Institution at Stanford. And this is in early October. And the rest of us, about a couple of dozen military historians and military people, looking at how is military history relevant to today. And we all spouted off and, you know, had our opinions and a lot of hot air and some good insights. But Jim Mattis just sat there and listened hour after hour. And when finally he intervened, he was succinct, incisive, right on the money, and I think he made everybody else in that room feel like an amateur. He really... You know, it's sad that he's got this nickname, Mad Dog Mattis. That was given to him by his Marines. And he knows how to get Marines fired up. He says colorful things. But in fact, he's a very thoughtful man. He's the antithesis of a mad dog. He knows that while we want to live in a New Testament world, we often live in an Old Testament world in terms of human behavior. And, you know, he's the greatest immorality in mundane matters, not being collateral damage, which is sometimes unavoidable, but the greatest immorality in mundane matters is for the United States to lose. Because when the United States loses, our civilization loses. Now, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I think that, assuming he's confirmed, and I'm sure he will be, that the American people will have a true defender of this country as Secretary of Defense, someone who genuinely cares about our troops, because he's seen his Marines be gravely wounded or killed on battlefield after battlefield. He knows the cost of war. And I'll tell you something that makes me very angry is when the left says, oh, these generals, they always want to start wars. You know, Evan, for the last 16 years, it hasn't been generals starting wars. It has been civilians with no military experience whatsoever.
Politicians.
Often disdainful of our military, people who would never dream of serving in the military themselves, and they send our people off to fight. Now, sometimes you got to go to fight, but the ill-considered foreign interventions, the impetuous military operations in places like Libya that weren't thought through, they weren't brought to us by generals. And I think Jim Mattis, who's an absolute pro-American, nonpartisan kind of guy, he will be the perfect corrective for all the politically correct nonsense that's been inflicted on our troops in the last 8 years.
Well, in case you just joined us, you're listening to the Washington Watch broadcast. I'm talking with Lieutenant Colonel Ralph Peters, a Fox News strategic analyst. We're talking about the announcement that was made last night by President-elect Donald Trump about his intention to appoint General James Mattis as Defense Secretary. Well, Colonel, you'd mentioned a little bit about your knowledge of General Mattis in terms of his character, perhaps the way he thinks. You know, we've got a couple of messes going on right now in Iraq and Afghanistan. Some would say that the current president has sort of messed things up the way that he and his administration have handled things. If you had to guess, and you may not want to at this point, but if you had to guess on how General Mattis would step in and deal with that. What would be your best estimate of how he would handle what's going on right now over there?
Well, we all have to be careful about putting our own views in the mouths of others. But Jim Mattis has been sharply critical of our Iran policy. I think he recognized how this deal with Iran that President Obama wanted at any price, and he paid a high price for it, has paralyzed our foreign policy in the Middle East. The Obama administration is so desperate to preserve the nuke deal as a legacy that they've let Iran run roughshod over us, take our sailors prisoner and humiliate them, work against our interests in Iraq, in Syria, in Lebanon, in Yemen, and we've done nothing. And I think General Mattis is a very sophisticated strategist, and he wouldn't advise the president to immediately abrogate the nuke deal because our allies are now behind it. I think his approach would be more that we stand up to Iran on the ground in the sea. They endanger our sailors or try to capture them. They get a military lesson in response, which leads Iran to, in a fit of pique, abrogate the deal. I mean, you've got to play chess. You've got to think 3, 4, 5 moves ahead.
Right.
And not play checkers. And the Iranians, remember the Persians, who formed the core of Iran's population, they invented chess. So we need a sophisticated thinker like General Mattis. And one can only hope that President Trump, who is not an expert in foreign affairs, will seriously listen to him. And, of course, I hope that we'll see a Secretary of State who has a demeanor and depth of experience that counterbalances other aspects of the administration.
Well, Colonel Peters, in the last minute or so, got one more question for you. And it seems under the Obama administration, those in the military have felt as if they're kind of out on their own. They've been left out to dry, so to speak. Based on, again, your knowledge of General Mattis, how do you think our troops are going to respond to this appointment?
Well, I think they're already responding. There's a mood of elation among the troops. I have never heard anyone say a negative word. Nobody knew him or knew of him. Say a negative word about General Mattis. And you're going to get some complaints from leftists in Congress, I'm sure. But the first step in rebuilding our military is rebuilding morale. And the choice of General Jim Mattis as our SecDef has already, in less than 24 hours, begun rebuilding morale, because the troops know that Jim Mattis will stand with them and in Washington, and he'll be behind them all the way. So I think this is just a stellar choice. Human beings are imperfect. Only God is perfect. And so we all have some reservations about other people. I have no reservations about General Mattis whatsoever.
Well, that's fantastic. Lieutenant Colonel Ralph Peters, Fox News strategist, analyst, and author, thanks so much for your time and your insight about General Mattis. Looking forward to see how that appointment goes.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Well, coming up next, the House has upped its budget to investigate Planned Parenthood. Coming up next here to talk about it is the niece of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Dr. Alveda King. You're listening to the Washington Watch broadcast. This is Evan Fowler with Bot Radio Network sitting in for Tony Perkins.
From the ruling to uphold Obamacare's individual mandate, to the ruling to redefine marriage, to the ruling that allows the government to seize a citizen's home, these are the many important decisions that the United States Supreme Court has made recently. But did you know that each of these three decisions was determined by a one-vote margin? The Supreme Court's decisions affect all of us, and it decides about 70 cases every year. Over the next 8 years, we could get as many as 4 new Supreme Court justices. Furthermore, these justices will have a huge impact on the sanctity of human life, religious liberty, and the size and scope of government, and even parental rights. Join Family Research Council Action as we work to ensure the confirmation of Supreme Court justices who will uphold the Constitution and simply apply the law as the founders intended. Become a member today at frcaction.org. That's frcaction.org.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your health care with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger. A group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org. healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
We are going to the Holy Land in March. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. I only lead one tour a year to Israel. It's not my day job. It's just an annual tour that I do as I learn from my dad how to take folks to Israel. And we're going to have a wonderful experience. Most of the folks going are listeners to American Family Radio, are supporters of American Family Association. And we're going to have a great time March 9th through the 17th. If you want information on this tour of the Holy Land, you can do it two ways. You can call us at 800-FAMILIES, option 5. 1-800-FAMILIES, option 5, that's families with an S, and leave us your name and your address, and we'll put a brochure in the mail to you. And if you want to go online, you can visit us at twholyland.com, twholyland.com. Again, won't be long till we close out this tour, so if you want more information, let us know.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. It's a crisp afternoon here in Kansas City. This is Eben Fowler sitting in for Tony Perkins on this beautiful Friday afternoon. And the music is telling us, of course, that we're heading into that most glorious time of the year, the Christmas season. I love that music. I heard it yesterday when Tony was hosting the broadcast, and I'm glad Brent brought it up today so we can all feel, like we're heading toward that time. Well, our next topic, we're going to be talking about Planned Parenthood. The House Select Panel on Infant Lives released a list of 9 criminal and regulatory referrals against abortion providers and or fetal tissue procurement companies made as a result of their investigation into the illegal practice of selling aborted baby body parts and for profit, of course. The House of Representatives voted on Thursday to double the budget of the committee investigating the abortion business. In fact, the additional amount that they're asking for is $800,000. And, of course, that was passed along party lines, 234 to 181, as Democrats objected to that vote. Well, you know, if you know anything about the Republican and Democratic Party platforms, you can understand why that was a party line vote. There's a vast difference between the way those two platforms deal with the life issue. Well, here to talk about this subject is Dr. Alveda King. She's the niece of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. She serves as a pastoral associate and director of Civil Rights for the Unborn, the African-American Outreach for Priests for Life, and Gospel of Life Ministries. Alveda, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much.
It's great.
Great.
Great talking with you again. Well, tell us what you think about, first of all, the panel that's doing this investigation and then their need for an increase in their budget.
Well, I believe that any panel that investigates the abortion industry, Planned Parenthood, is on the right track. There have been so many exposés that were not official out of Washington that are very, very telling. Planned Parenthood gets government tax dollars every year. They consistently say that, we're not using that for abortions. We're doing it, using it for other things. Well, if they use our tax dollars for anything, that frees up any of their money to continue to be the largest abortion provider. So the $500,000, I think if they would defund Planned Parenthood and use the money from the tax dollars that are going to them, it would certainly be very beneficial for them getting the right kind of answer.
Exactly. And $800,000, I did a little bit of quick math, and you mentioned the $500 million that Planned Parenthood gets out of the taxpayers' pockets every year. Hopefully we're going to see that stop really quickly with this new administration. But that $800,000 that the House committee is requesting is 1.6% of that $500 million. I would say that should be a down payment to the defunding of Planned Parenthood, wouldn't you think?
I would certainly agree, and I believe that if you're listening right now, please begin to contact your members of Congress and other people of influence, even at the city, state, federal level, the county level. Just really begin to have this conversation, get it out on social media. We have to do something, people. We really do.
You know, a lot of our listeners are familiar with the background of Planned Parenthood, but I'd like you to talk a little bit about its history and Margaret Sanger and how and what they think about the black community in terms of particularly their past history.
Well, Planned Parenthood started out as the Birth Control League. It was founded by Margaret Sanger, who was a eugenicist and actually a racist. I know that particular word is inflammatory these days, but it's true. She lectured to members of the Ku Klux Klan on population control. During her lifetime, she said that colored people are like weeds. They need to be exterminated. We don't want the word to get out, so let's cultivate some of their leaders. And they had projects, the Negro Project, the Tuskegee Project, which were genocidal eugenicist schemes. And Margaret Sanger, Planned Parenthood emerged, the name was changed from the Birth Control League to Planned Parenthood because it sounds catchier. People would say, oh, well, maybe they don't really like birth control, but Planned Parenthood. Let them think that they're going to control their choices about parenthood. So what they did not explain, most of the birth control was experimental, and it ended up being linked to stroke, heart attacks, breast cancer, cervical cancer, depression, and all of that. We know that abortion is also linked to many of those illnesses. So Planned Parenthood does not want us to know any of that. And also that it is a program to control the population growth of the African American community. Now, very interesting, something that people do not know. My Uncle Martin Luther King Jr. was pro-life. My dad, Reverend A.D. King, was pro-life. My granddaddy, Daddy King. But Uncle ML's wife, Mrs. Coretta King, was like Mrs. Laura Bush and Mrs. Barbara Bush, pro-abortion, as they call it, pro-choice. However, in 1966, when the Birth Control League, Planned Parenthood by then, offered Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. the first Maggie Award, the first Margaret Sanger Award, he did not attend the ceremony, he did not write the speech, he did not write the thank you note. That was done by the women who had been tricked by Planned Parenthood. I was tricked by Planned Parenthood, and I had two secret abortions and a related miscarriage. But in 1983, I was born again, and when I was born again, the lights came on. That's why I'm joining Concerned Women of America in Washington, D.C., December 3rd, and other pro-life leaders. We will be praying and peacefully demonstrating in front of an abortion mill in Washington, D.C., demanding hashtag 100 no more. Planned Parenthood wants to celebrate 100 years of really destroying mothers and babies' lives. And we are saying hashtag 100 no more.
That's right. Well, Dr. Alveda King, first of all, I want to thank you so much for the diligent work that you do and the passionate work that you do on behalf of the pro-life community and the pro-life issue.
And that's at civilrightsfortheunborn.com with Speak for Life. That's where you can find me. Yes.
Civilrightsfortheunborn.com. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Alveda. Great talking with you.
Thank you so much.
Coming up, Democrats elected Nancy Pelosi again, and Republicans are celebrating. We'll find out why here shortly. Lindsay Walters, national spokesperson at the Republican National Committee, will be here to tell us why on Washington Watch.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
One of the questions I get often is about long-term care insurance. Long-term care insurance is the idea of insuring the cost that you would have if you were to go into a skilled nursing facility, a nursing home at some point in time in your life. It is a wonderful product and is sold by most insurance companies. And it is a product in which you pay every month. And if you should ever need it, they will pay a certain amount to you or to a nursing home for your daily expenses. But I do want to point out a couple of things. Oftentimes, we don't buy enough benefit. We might buy a $100 a day benefit when the cost is going to be $150 a day. We may also buy a product without an inflation rider protection. So though you buy it today and you buy a $150 benefit, by the time you use it 20 years from now, it may be $250. So you need that to go up with inflation. It is a great product, but it isn't for everybody. And it is very expensive, but it can be made cheaper, less expensive, by eliminating some of the benefits. So you've got to be very careful about how you purchase those kinds of plans. Again, it is a great product, but remember, you're insuring a risk that you may never have. And remember that it is going to be a monthly payment that you're going to have to pay for the rest of your life in order to ever have the opportunity to use this benefit should you get into that difficult situation.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
And welcome back to Washington Watch. Eben Fowler from Bot Radio Network sitting in again for Tony Perkins on this great Friday afternoon, this crisp, cool Friday afternoon, probably for most of you, unless you're, you know, way south and it's like a summer day, or you're in Florida or California, somewhere like that. Well, you know, guess what? Nancy Pelosi was reelected to run for two more years as the House Minority Leader. And let me read just a little bit of a comment from an article about this that just came out, I think, today. First of all, what I want to do is quote Tim Ryan, Congressman Tim Ryan, who was running against Pelosi for that position. He said, "This election is not going to be won at fundraisers on the coasts," the Ohio Democrat told the Wall Street Journal last week. "It's going to be won in union halls in the industrial Midwest and fish fries in the Midwest and the South." Ryan made the point again on NBC's Meet the Press on Sunday. "We've got to have someone who cannot just go on MSNBC, but go on Fox and Fox Business and CNBC and go into union halls and fish fries and churches all over the country and start a brush fire about what a new Democratic Party looks like." Well, Nancy Pelosi then said, and she was quoted in the Huffington Post on Monday, "He didn't even carry his district for Hillary Clinton," Pelosi said with a laugh, "so I don't know why he's saying that." And Pelosi's remark, I would think, seems to be astoundingly tone deaf. Here to talk about that on the line with us is Lindsay Walters. She's a national spokesperson at the Republican National Committee. Lindsay, how are you?
I'm good. It's great to be with you this evening. How are you?
Very good. And thank you for taking the time. You know, this is something interesting that I found. I was listening again to some of the talking heads. Probably it was yesterday. No, this was actually a couple of days ago. There was an interview. It was probably on CNN with a couple of Democratic Party operatives. One of them, I believe, had worked on Hillary Clinton's 2008 campaign. And, you know, the question was, and you've heard this question in the last few days, so why is it that the Democrats didn't win the election? You know, why didn't Hillary Clinton win? And you're hearing all sorts of reasoning for, you know, the outcome of the election. And one of the things that astounded me is that one of these former Democrat Party operatives said, well, we just didn't communicate the message well enough. We didn't communicate our message. And one of the other things was, well, we didn't reach out to some of the demographics, you know, like the white working class that we normally carry because Trump swept them away with his rhetoric and so on and so forth. It seems to me that the problem is not communication. And I want your view on this, Lindsay. The problem is the policy. And if the Democrats articulated the policies that we've been living with for the last 8 years, for goodness sake, they probably still wouldn't win, even if they communicate. In fact, if they did communicate it clearly, they definitely wouldn't win. But what do you think this all says? The fact that they have dredged up once again Nancy Pelosi for this position, same old tired kind of thing. What's your view on this?
I think you asked two parts there. You know, the first part is that Hillary Clinton's message didn't resonate with the voters, and that was very clear from early on as she struggled. You even heard her say at one point, you know, I should be up by X number of points, and yet she wasn't, because her message wasn't resonating, because the American people were tired of the status quo and the Obama administration. They viewed Hillary Clinton as a continuation of that, and they were ready for a change agent, which is what they saw in Donald Trump. And if you go back even further to the primaries, you saw where Bernie Sanders, who was a guideline socialist, made headwinds, and he was gaining support, significant support, from part of the Democrat base, and yet the DNC and the Democrat elite wanted to tip the scale and were very quick to close the ranks behind a very flawed candidate in Hillary Clinton, and they didn't listen to their voters. And so by the time it came to the general election, you had a party that was fractured. The Republicans are always known for coming home, and that's what we saw happen with Donald Trump. And then you look at the second part of your question, as for Nancy Pelosi and being, you know, reelected. Her reelection should have been wrapped up weeks ago, but a revolt within the Democrat caucus caused for the vote to be postponed and left, you know, Pelosi heaving. This is something where, again, they're not listening to what their voters want. Obviously, the message wasn't resonating. It's not what the voters want, and yet here they are electing back into place the same status quo that failed them in November with the election.
Well, you know, you talk about how it wasn't what their voters wanted necessarily. And my question is, it doesn't necessarily matter what voters want. It's what the country needs, wouldn't you think?
Exactly. It's what the voters view that the country needs. When you go to cast your vote, you're concerned about, am I better off today than I was 8 years ago? What is my future going to look like? What's the future for my parents, for my children? What does that snapshot look like for you? And that's what drives people to go out and vote. You heard last night Kellyanne Conway say something to the effect that people didn't vote for what offended them. They voted for what was going to affect them.
Yeah.
And moving forward, what is going to change this country and get it back onto a direction that people feel that it's working for them and not working for the elites in Washington, D.C. And that's what they saw in Donald Trump. They saw it in Hillary Clinton, a continuation of the Obama administration and years of policies that had not worked for America, and they wanted a change. And people were willing to take the risk on somebody who was an outside candidate in order of the hope that there would be change and that the country would start working for the people.
Lindsay Walters, national spokesperson at the Republican National Committee. It's been a quick, short segment. We appreciate your time and your insight very much. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, President-elect Trump says there should be consequences for burning the American flag. As you can imagine, that comment has fueled the debate once again. Well, after the break, we'll talk with Richard Parker. He's a professor of law at Harvard University, and we'll take your calls. So here's the number, 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234 on Washington Watch.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your health care with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger. A group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty Health Share.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org. healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
Hello, I'm John Nyhoff, the president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi. Wesley Biblical Seminary provides a solid foundation based upon the inerrancy of the Bible and the call to holy living. Online or at our Jackson, Mississippi or Greenwood, Indiana campuses, our academically rigorous learning community will add incredible value to your Christian experience. Wesley Biblical Seminary, where faith and learning ignite with passion for Christ. WBS.edu.
Thank you for helping send thousands of children on the greatest journey. Here's Franklin Graham.
So we give God the glory, we praise Him, and we thank you for your support, for your prayers, making this happen.
For each $6, another child is trained for discipleship. You can still give at 877-616-2396 or at afr.net. Thanks to you, children are going on the greatest journey.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber, president, co-founder of 8 Days of Hope. 8 Days of Hope was meant to be a one-time trip to Bay St. Louis, Waveland, Mississippi after Hurricane Katrina. And then God got involved. And since then, we have been to 9 different states, rebuilt 1,700 homes, and it's all because we love Jesus. God tells us to love Him and love others. And that's what we do, either through 8 Days of Hope or a new ministry called Hope Reigns. Hope Reigns goes immediately after disaster, a tornado, a flood, a fire, a snowstorm. But what we noticed with disasters is right after disaster, there's so many ministry opportunities. We've already been to New York, Illinois, Tennessee, Texas. So if someone's interested in 8 Days of Hope or Hope Reigns, the best place to go is our website, 8daysofhope.com. And even though we might not have an event planned the day you go to the website, if you give us your email address on our website, we'll be able to contact you about future events.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas everywhere you go. Take a look in the 5 and 10, glistening once again with candy canes and silver lanes aglow.
Yeah, it's beginning to look a lot like Christmas, depending upon where you are. They're saying that we might get a little bit of snow here in Kansas City tonight. We'll see. That would be kind of nice. Well, final topic here, and let me ask you to go ahead and pick up your phone if you want to get involved in this conversation. The number is 866-372-7234. That's 866-372-7234 to get on board here on Washington Watch. This is Eben Fowler from Bot Radio Network sitting in for Tony Perkins on this beautiful Friday afternoon. Well, some New Yorkers came out to burn American flags outside Trump Tower Tuesday night after President-elect Donald Trump tweeted that flag burners should face legal consequences. The protesters included members of the Revolutionary Communist Party, which burned flags outside the Republican National Convention in Cleveland last July. Seems to be a trend there. Well, Trump tweeted early Tuesday that people who burn the flag might have to serve a year in jail or have their citizenship revoked. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled in 1989 that flag burning is a form of free speech protected under the First Amendment. In fact, Justice Antonin Scalia sided with protesters. He later said that he based his ruling on a textual reading of the Constitution. And the court has also ruled a number of times that citizenship can't be revoked. Well, joining us now is Harvard professor Richard Parker. He's a professor of law. He's also the chairman of the board of directors for the Citizens Flag Alliance, established by the American American Legion. Welcome to Washington Watch, Professor Parker.
Yes, hi.
Good to have you on board. Well, to be clear, let's just say this right up front. You support a constitutional amendment that would...
I'm having real trouble hearing you.
Okay, we'll keep trying here. You support a constitutional amendment that would make it illegal to burn the American flag. As a matter of fact, you testified before Congress in 2005. Are you able to hear me now? All right, very good. We'll be calling him back just to get a little bit better connection. So just to let you know, Professor Parker does support a constitutional amendment that would make it illegal to burn the American flag. So we're going to have an interesting conversation here with him. Hopefully we can get him back up on the line shortly. And he testified, as I mentioned, before Congress in 2005 in favor of such an amendment, kind of a flag protection amendment, if you will. And, you know, this is one of those conversations that, you know, you can kind of teeter on either side of it, because we have this thing called the First Amendment, which allows for speech that perhaps a lot of us might not like. And it depends upon, you know, which side of the board you're on as to what, you know, what speech you find offensive. And, you know, a lot of people find it offensive when people desecrate the flag in one way or another, and burning seems to be one of the favorite ways to do that. And, you know, we do have the First Amendment, and it's protected. That kind of speech is protected by the Constitution. And, you know, there are some forms of speech, of course, that we perhaps we can say really are not appropriate. The typical example of that is crying fire or screaming fire in a theater when there really isn't a fire. You know, that certainly is an objectionable kind of thing. But, you know, I don't know how you all think about this or where you come out on it, but it's something that it's really important for us to have a conversation about this. And we will ask you to join in the call. In fact, let me just have you jump online right now. 866-372-7234 is the number. In case we can't get our guest on, you and I will just have a conversation. 866-372-7234 to join us here on Washington Watch this afternoon. Well, you know, a couple of comments about this thing. You know, if flag burning was illegal, and back in 1949, the law was kind of restrictive in Israel, believe it or not, Israel has had a flag and emblem law, is what they call it, which has been on the books since 1949. They established a maximum one-year penalty and a fine not exceeding 300 shekels or both. And now there have been some provisions to actually increase the penalty to 3 years and a maximum fine of around the equivalent of $15,000. Don't know how many shekels that would be. Quite a few for most of us, certainly. The amendment also gives the Israeli courts the power to deny state benefits such as health care or Social Security for a period of 6 years to those convicted under the law. So we haven't been able to get our guest back on the line. If we do, we will bring him on. But what I want to do is bring on one of our callers. And this is Sid in Texas, who wants to talk about the flag burning issue. Sid, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me on.
Absolutely. What do you think?
So really, I am definitely against flag burning, but at the same time, we got to, you know, stand up for our First Amendment rights. And I definitely think that as free speech is guaranteed for all of us, even if we don't like people burning the flag, I don't think that we should allow people to be punished in the extreme way that Trump is giving his opinion on, simply because if we allow them to punish, you know, Americans or non-Americans, immigrants or whatever, based upon their right to want to exercise their First Amendment and burning the flag, what comes next?
That's right. That's right. Now, do you think that that Trump's, you know, he's known for a little bit of hyperbole once in a while. Do you think that maybe he was just overstating the point? What do you think?
I really don't think that he is going to pursue this. I just think he was giving his opinion and he didn't matter. But I don't think that it should be taken lightly if he really would want to pursue something like that.
Absolutely. Well, Sid, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it. Next on the line is Darius from Missouri, and you want to talk about free speech as well.
Yes, sir. I know that there are laws on the books which limit free speech in terms of slander and defamation, and certainly an individual has the right to say whatever they wish, but they also have the responsibility of being prosecuted if what they say is considered slanderous and meets the criteria of those laws. I think the burning of the flag is probably much the same way. You have the right to do it, but you also have the right to be prosecuted if you do.
So, I mean, is that your view? Do you think that that there should be prosecution for flag burning or flag desecration?
Well, there have been laws in the past on the books that
right.
Issued a mandatory fine for burning or desecration of the flag, and I would think that it would be altogether appropriate for us to restore those laws and enforce them.
Yeah, and this is just a great conversation to have. Darris, thank you so much for your call. Next up, we've got Bob from Missouri, and Bob is a vet, and he wants to talk about flag burning as well. Bob, welcome to Washington Watch, and thanks for your call.
Okay, first of all, I appreciate taking my call. I'm an ex-vet, and here's the problem I have with the Supreme Court. If you look up the authorial intent of the authors and what they meant under the First Amendment of the word speech, all you got to do is look up the Webster's 1828 dictionary, and it quotes, end quote, says this: it's the faculty of being able to articulate an idea or disagreement through the means of talking. And then it actually goes ahead and uses scripture verses to go ahead and read to put it in context. The problem with the Supreme Court is they always want to reinterpret what authors mean to fit the culture's purpose. And so, quite frankly, as an ex-vet, I don't care what the Supreme Court goes ahead and rules, okay? I'm not going to go ahead and stand for it, okay? I understand it's the law of the country, all right? But as far as I'm concerned, when you go ahead and twist what the authors of the Constitution meant, I'm sorry, that to me is absolutely illegal.
Bob, thank you so much for your call, and thank you so much for serving our country in the way that you have. Up next is Tony from South Dakota. Tony, what's your thought about flag burning?
Can you hear me okay?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay, good deal. Well, I agree with Bob on what he was talking about as far as how we twist words, or we change the meanings of words, or we add to the meanings of words for all these different contexts. And flag burning is not speech. That's an act. So to call it speech doesn't make any sense. It's illogical, actually. I myself, same thing, I'm a vet, and I serve this country because of what our flag stands for. And the idea of a citizen of this country burning the flag because they think they want to say something makes no sense to me.
Well,
and
you know, it
really gets under me.
It seems, you know, as a veteran, you know, you served our country, and you served, you know, don't know what specifically where you served, but I know vets have, I think we all have a vested interest in this, but our veterans certainly have a deeper, much more passionate feeling, wouldn't you think?
Absolutely. I think you're right about that. But I also know a lot of, I'm friends with a lot of people, have a lot of acquaintances that they're patriotic and love this country and think the same way. Maybe not as passionate, but think the same way because this is what it is, but probably more old school than not. And so, I want to add something else, when it's all said and done, I don't like doing this, because it just is what it is. But in this day and age, with kind of the way things are and so forth and so on, things that have been said, it almost seems relevant these days. But I am also a black man. And it seems like a lot of times you don't hear that coming from the black community, as far as if you want to call it that or whatever as well. So just I wanted to throw that out there as well.
Well, thank you so much. And again, thank you for serving our country in the way that you did. We greatly appreciate that. Well, the phone number is 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. Unfortunately, I don't think we're going to be able to bring our Harvard University professor guest online, so we're just going to have a great conversation for the rest of the hour with our wonderful listeners. And one of those listeners is William, calling from Missouri, again, wants to talk about flag burning. William, thanks for calling, and welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me. I appreciate it. This is just like a big deal to me. I'm also a vet. It seems like you're getting a lot of vets on the air right now.
Amen.
I just don't know where we went wrong, you know, in raising the kids or the younger generation. And I'm only 25. I may be part of that millennial generation, but I don't understand like where it, you know, other people went wrong in raising their kids. Like, I was raised, you know, to love my country and to love everything about it. And if you see something wrong, you do something about it. You know, like, you correct it right then and there. You don't don't wait. You just fix it. And the whole flag burning thing, it really gets under my skin. Like, it frustrates me more than anything. I haven't witnessed it firsthand, but I definitely do not agree that it's, you know, freedom of speech. Like, at one point in time, does that become freedom of speech? Because if it's always been freedom of speech, and I have, you know, my speech is punching you right in the mouth if you're doing it, you know? I completely disagree with it.
Well, again, William, thank you for serving the country. And it's a blessing that we're hearing from so many vets this afternoon. We appreciate your calls. Again, the number is 866-372-7234. This is a lively and interesting topic. And John from Arkansas is on the line with us on Washington Watch. John, welcome. Thanks for your call.
Thank you for taking my call, brother, and thank you for what you do. You know, I've been listening, and I find that the conversation is very interesting. I'm not a vet, but my grandfather, my uncles, they all served, and I'm currently working for the Department of Defense. And, you know, my thing about burning the flag, it's real simple. A lot of people have gave their lives, the ultimate sacrifice, so that people would have the right to open their mouths and say whatever they'd like. And that flag is a representation of those lives that were given. And for somebody that's never served, that's never, you know, really done anything to contribute to a country, I'm not saying that everybody that burns the flag is that people, but it just is extremely disheartening, and it just shows a disrespect for those that gave their lives so that those people could stand there and do that. I don't agree that it's freedom of speech. Speech is real simple. It's words. Say whatever you'd like, but don't burn Old Glory, because Old Glory is the reason why so many people come to this great nation and why we have such a great nation in the first place.
Well, thanks, John, for your call. Really appreciate it. Dale from Mississippi is up next on Washington Watch. Dale, thanks for joining the broadcast today.
Thank you for taking my call. I also am a vet, and I want to agree, first of all, with Bob. You know, as far as the Supreme Court twisting the words of Merriam-Webster and the definition of speech, you know, I don't think the flag is a part of speech, and I don't think it should be construed as such. The flag is a representation of our country, and it's an emblem of our country. Sure, it's an emblem of the people, but it's not a part of our speech. We don't use it as part of our speech. Or we don't use it to convey a thought like you do speech or tools of speech. And, I too get so irritated at the thought of the flag being desecrated. And I've seen YouTube videos of people who retaliate when they see someone stomping on or urinating on a flag or burning a flag, and then they're the ones who get taken to jail, and I get so irritated with that because they took away somebody's rights because of what they did, because of what somebody else did, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely. Well, Dale, thank you so much for your call, and thank you as well for serving. Thanks all of you who called this afternoon. You know, we've got some great listeners, and it's wonderful to hear from you. You know, I'm kind of glad that we didn't have our guests because it gave us an opportunity to talk with all of you. And we appreciate your listening and taking the time and your thoughtful comments as well. So, you know, I just want to wish all of you just have a great weekend. Thank you so much for listening to Washington Watch. This is Evan Fowler sitting in once again for Tony Perkins. Have a great weekend, and God bless.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.